The expression, "there's more than one way to skin a cat," is a colloquial reminder that there are many ways to solve a problem or achieve an outcome. And that's demonstrably true when it comes to monitoring networks and network services. From SNMP to flow records to packet captures, engineers have a multitude of choices. On today's Heavy Networking, we talk with sponsor NetRounds about another approach, that of active testing and service assurance. Rather than passively collect metrics, NetRounds software generates synthetic traffic to measure actual performance of critical services. It helps network engineers ensure that key performance indicators are being met and identify where problems are occurring when KPIs aren't being met. Joining us to talk about active testing and the concept of service assurance are Mats Nordlund, CEO and co-founder of NetRounds, and Stefan Wallin, Director of Product Strategy. And I can assure everyone that no cats were harmed in the recording of this podcast. Mats and Stefan, welcome to Heavy Networking. And Mats, can you take a couple of minutes to introduce NetRounds to the Packet Pushers audience? Tell us what the company does.
Thank you so much for that introduction, Drew. It's fantastic to be here. It's my pleasure, and Stefan's as well. So NetRounds is a global software company. We're headquartered in Sweden. We target service providers and enterprises, and we help them to two things, basically. First of all, we help them to do it right the first time, and then we help them to do it right all the time when it comes to networking. So we provide a programmable, software-based, active test and monitoring solution that we have deployed at hundreds of customers around the world, and they use it to actively verify that the network services work when they have launched or configured or updated their services, but also to do real-time monitoring during the lifetime of these services. That's in a nutshell what NetRounds does.
Okay, so there's a lot there to unpack, but before we dive into details, who is your target market? Are you going after enterprises, service providers? What's the play?
Basically, we target anyone that believes that their network is at the center of the gravity. But joking aside, we target service providers and enterprises.
The network is the center of the known universe. You just don't know it. That's
just try doing anything without it.
We have 50% customers in the enterprise segment, 50% in the service provider. So pretty much an equal split.
Okay. And major use cases, what are folks using you for?
So we have three major use cases. We have use cases around the public and private clouds, or hybrid clouds, if you will. But also the SD-WANs and global VPNs that interconnect these data centers. And the third area is more centered around the edge sites or edge locations, campus locations, if you will. So data centers, VPNs, campus sites.
All right, great. So that gives us a good background. So let's dig into the good stuff. As I mentioned in the intro, there's a lot of ways you can monitor the network, a lot of ways to get visibility. But NetRounds, you guys say you're doing something differently.
So unlike other solutions at NetRounds, we combine, first of all, testing and active monitoring in a single software platform. So our software generates traffic on the data plane from layer 1 to layer 7, essentially acting clients on the network. With that, we cover the full network lifecycle from the initial testing of the service to ensure that it works, and then also the ongoing real-time monitoring of the service specifically.
Okay, so can you drill a little bit more into this idea of active assurance and how it's different from what folks might be familiar with, like SNMP or Syslog or probes?
Yeah, so this is Stefan speaking, since I'm the cat owner and she's beside me here.
cat-powered.
She's my favorite co-worker. Sorry, Mats, but I prefer
no
cats.
No problem.
Yeah, so usually when you talk about network monitoring, I mean, most of the people think about the central piece of software that look at traps and syslogs and files and tries to make some sense of that data in some way. Today, they might call it telemetry, but still the same thing, collect some data from the devices, make something useful out of it. That's what most people think of when they hear network monitoring. I'll try to elaborate a little bit on that. But there are different kinds of system, and then you can slice that in different ways. What we usually try to explain is to look at some systems connected to the management plane, some system connect at the data plane. So that's the divider I'm going to use here. So let's start with the first category, systems that connect to the management plane. And the classical alarm systems, fault management systems, that's a classical category here. They look at traps, syslogs, and they designed around a basic purpose. What is in the network? Do I have a faulty device? Do I have a faulty interface? That's what they are targeted at. Then the second category, I'm simplifying here, of course, but the second category might be the performance monitoring systems. they also connect it to management plane. They pull data like every 5 minutes, every 15 minutes, and they try to look more from a usage perspective. Do I have any overutilization on the links to my data center? What about the resources? Are they overutilized there? Those are the two main categories if you look at connecting to the management plane. Moving on to systems that look at the data plane, maybe the most well-known ones are passive probes or even DPI systems. Mm. They connect at the packet level. They look at the actual packets, and that's also useful because doing that, you can understand sort of traffic patterns, you can understand the distribution of protocols, you can understand customers and employees, what kind of applications slash protocols are they using. You can understand from which location do we have a heavy load, etc. So that's the kind of questions they ask. Now, finally, moving on to talking to the data plane, we have active systems like Netrun. So here's a big difference, though. We don't look at packets from the users. We are traffic generators. So rather than being a tap, we're a client. So you hook the active agent to the network, acting as a client, it generates traffic and does calculation based on that traffic. And that gives you a lot of interesting features.
Yeah, so just to emphasize the difference there, people who capture packets is one way of capturing the data. The other ways people do it is to use flow logging. And then the way you're doing it is using synthetic transactions. You have a nodes in the network and they conduct synthetic transactions that you program them to take. The advantage of synthetic transactions is they're doing exactly what the user gets. And the second advantage that I have in my mind is that you don't have this massive volumes of data that you have to do something with. And there's an advantage and a disadvantage to each, I think.
Correct. And also another difference is, for example, going back to the lifecycle thing that Mats talked about, imagine you connect a new branch office with an SD-WAN link and you want to test that. Before you actually have the 100 workers coming on Monday morning, you're doing this work on Saturday and you want to test it. And to test it, you can't use passive because then you need 100 workers to come into the office, start looking at ask everyone to look at Netflix, and then you can say it did not work.
So you could actually do load testing because you have the synthetic transaction tool, or that probe, whatever you call that. Mm. You could actually say, give me 100 VoIP calls and see what the WAN looks like. Now, obviously, creating 100 VoIP calls in the middle of a working day as a viable test isn't a very good test.
No.
So there's kind of a monitoring aspect, but there's also, instead of the passive testing, there's a difference between to proactive testing.
Yes, it's actually very good you mentioned that, because a unique thing with our product, at least for what we think, is that we combine testing capabilities and monitoring capabilities. Those are two very different animals. So the testing piece of Netrun is by nature intrusive, because as the example I gave, you launch a new branch office and then you certainly would like to test the throughput. Do we have 100 megs throughput and you want to measure like jitter latency under heavy load? And now you want to do intrusive load testing, but that's during a limited time. You run those tests for 5 or 30 minutes and then you have a test report saying, yes, it works. But then you can move on to constant monitoring. So on Monday morning, when the workers come into the office and they start doing the work, then we move on to the other phase that we can support, is the real-time monitoring. And here we have like hundreds of packets, maximum 50 packets per second, each packet like 100 bytes. So that's nothing compared to 100,000 packets on a gigabit interface. You don't see our traffic almost. You can ignore it during that constant monitoring phase. So there we don't do load testing, but there we do testing on all the layers. We can measure the network KPIs. We can do MOS calls. We can check video capabilities. Mm-hmm. That's non-intrusive. So testing is one thing, intrusive. Monitoring is another thing, non-intrusive. Mm-hmm. And both of them are proactive. So I think this is the interesting thing between sort of passive probes and active systems. They go hand in hand, but they answer different things. With active, you can be proactive. You can actually tell beforehand if you can have a WebEx call in an hour. But with a passive probe, you can sort of confirm, yes, dear user, you were right. We had a problem, and this might be the reason.
Different ways of solving the problem. But I think the one that I like about the proactive part is being able to do testing on a Saturday.
Yeah,
that might not accurately simulate what actually happens on a Thursday. There are weaknesses, you know, there's trade-offs in every decision you make, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But that ability to do have the probe out there and say, I'm going to generate 50 calls on this SD-WAN link on a Saturday and see what happens. And yes. you know the office is not attended, and so that's something you can't do with a passive, which I think there's value in that as well.
I think the other thing that Stefan noted is that with this constant monitoring, instead of just doing load testing, you can try to get out ahead of a problem, i.e. instead of waiting for a user to come back and say, hey, this WebEx was crappy, what's going on with the network? If you've got constant monitoring and testing going on, maybe you can get out ahead of a potential problem.
Oh, certainly. And that goes back to what Mats talked about initially. It's kind of sad that if you look at different studies, I mean, 40% of problems are reported by end users. And one of my favorite things also is that if you look at issues, are what's the main source of sort of a bad performing network? Is it a fault? No, most of the problem are more related to non-optimal configuration. So somewhere along the chain, there's a non-optimal queue config or a quality of service config. Per definition, not a fault. So not reported by fault management system, but has a huge impact on what you perceive from an end user and customer perspective. So with this tiny small packets going constant back and forth, we can proactively detect those kind of issues. And that I think is really cool. You can get real-time SLA monitoring proactive.
So I think that's a key point to emphasize. When you're talking about a non-optimal configuration, an SNMP system may not detect that as a fault,
no.
but it's still going to impact performance.
Yes.
Yeah, and this has a heavy impact, of course, if you think of a misconfigured firewall rule that blocks a very important port. It will never show up in your fault management system because, per definition, it's not a fault. It's just a misconfiguration. The only way to capture that is to send traffic like an end user on the data plane and make sure that it passes successfully or it's blocked, depending on your rules.
Okay, so we touched on it a little bit about MAS scores and voice. Can you give us some more examples of what you can actually measure with this active assurance method?
Yeah, so I mean, everything goes back to the data plane. And the data plane itself, we can split up in the traditional classical OSI stack with seven layers. So going from the lowest layer, which is the physical layer, with Netrunz, you can attack or address the wireless side, both for LTE as well as traditional Wi-Fi networks, where we can control certain radio parameters, but also monitor interference levels, radio levels. But then moving up the stack from layer 2, 3, and 4, which is more the network-oriented layers, we can measure. We have implemented most of the industry-specific performance measurement standards, like RFC 6349 for stateful TCP. We have implemented ITU standards, which are WIFE 1731 for reflection-based OAM on the Ethernet layer, but also the two-way active measurement protocol, which is RFC 5357. And that is very interesting. That means that our system can also interact with built-in operations and maintenance functions in routers, such as IPSLA or other capabilities in InnoBs, for instance. So in the layers 2 to 4, we can measure one-way delay, packet metrics, and we can measure metrics like the traditional loss metrics, reordering metrics. And we can set this up in a wide variety of scenarios, from simple point-to-point, hub and spoke, and even fully meshed scenarios. And that's in the mid-range of the protocol stack. If we move up to the session and application layers, for SIP, we measure SIP signaling performance, as well as SIP media quality transport. And then on top of that, we have video support for streaming video over the top, HTTP live streaming, as well as multicast streaming. And then on top of that, we have the traditional internet performance metrics for DNS response times, HTTP download rates, and the traditional ping ones. So all these layers are now exposed, so you can programmatically choose, you can mix and match the tools that we expose to drive your automation, to help your automation drive this.
Okay, so you made a distinction about SNMP and syslog being at the management plane and positioning your product as acting at the data plane level. What's important about this distinction for how you guys operate?
So, I mean, as an end user or as a customer, I mean, if you come into your office and you consume your applications, your VoIP calls and your video conferencing, what you're actually perceiving is the quality of the network, and the network is the data plane. So the quality of the packets, really. That's what matters at the end. And going back to Matt's discussion initially, maybe it starts all the way in the public cloud where you have an application that is hosted and that you're consuming locally over your Wi-Fi. And no matter somewhere along that chain, what matters is the performance of those packets going back and forth. And that's at the data plane. So being able to measure the quality of the data plane there is what matters. And not the management plane, because the management plane might tell you something different. So if the data plane is what matters for end users and customers, why don't measure at the data plane? For us, that's kind of obvious, because that gives you the true measurements. If you go to the management plane, you might need to do some trick. You can get some counters there and then try some magic to infer back to what that means from a network perspective. And that's almost alchemy, as we sometimes say. So you sort of look at low-grade metal and you try to do some tricks to get some gold. Why don't get the gold directly from the data plane? That's our trick.
Okay, that makes sense. So instead of trying to infer, you just measure the data plane itself.
Yes, exactly. Yep. Okay.
But there may be folks saying, but with this synthetic testing, I'm on the data plane. Am I going to impact my own traffic? I don't want to do that with a testing product.
Yeah. The first objection we get initially, and I would say also slightly misconception of the actual load. And as we mentioned previously, I mean, let's say you have a branch office with a bunch of workers, and what, from our perspective, you inject one test agent there that emits synthetic traffic, and that's like 50 packets per second, each packet 100 bytes. That's what we do. And with that, you get 1 second resolution of real-time monitoring. And compare those 50 packets per second with the traffic of those 10, 20, or 50, or 100 workers. And with the thing you get on the gigabit interface, you can literally ignore the load from us during that real-time monitoring. You don't even see it, those few packets per second. So it's nothing.
Okay, so minimal load.
Yes.
And that's, I mean, the thing about synthetic testing is you can also reduce the load. So you can turn it off or on as you need. You can schedule it so synthetic testing happen. Yes. If you're concerned about that, you can schedule it down or schedule it up as you need.
Yes. And that's, I mean, there are sort of different phases we talked about previously. I mean, during Saturday, you probably want to do some stress testing, and then you sort of do heavy testing for your real-time monitoring. I mean, everything is configurable. Do you want to send 10 packets per second or 30 packets per second? That's configurable. Another thing, I mean, looking at sort of service chains, et cetera, in the data center, I mean, since the test agent we provide is so small, you can actually spin it up on demand. So even in the case of you seeing some issues in the network, you can have the automation tool or the orchestrator to, at runtime, deploy the test agent, run a couple of tests, and even sort of undeploy the test agent if you so like. So that's a perfect use case. And for troubleshooting as well, you can turn them up, you can bring them down as you go. And we have APIs for all that.
Are you positioning NetRounds as like a replacement for other monitoring tools? You're saying come in and chuck out all that other stuff and just go with active testing?
No, I would say, I mean, I kind of mentioned four categories early on here. Fault management systems looking at faults in the resources, performance monitoring tools looking at long-term statistics on usage, passive probes to look at traffic patterns. You need those as well because they can do different things. But I would say what we have sort of missed in the industry is why do customers report 40% of the problem? We have forgot to use active technology. So simplifying, you need four kind of tools. You need fault management, performance management, passive probes, and active monitoring. And we focus on active monitoring. So with all those four, you probably have a very good monitoring solution, and most of the people have forgotten the active piece. So they're actually designed for different purposes.
And if I can chime in here, so I would recommend everyone to go to netrounds.com/packetpushers, where we have prepared a monitoring cheat sheet that explains all these four different monitoring tools that you need and what the role active testing and monitoring plays in this landscape. Very simple to consume, just one single page. Feel free to download.
Okay, wow, you guys came prepared.
Yes. We have been trying to educate the industry and our customers, so I think the audience will find it useful as well.
So one thing we hear about a lot on packet pushers is the notion of telemetry, where information, data points, metrics are being streamed off a device to some kind of consumption system for analysis. How do you guys sort of compare yourself to telemetry? Do you feel like you're a telemetry system, or how do you fit into that bucket?
It's a good question. And I would say that's also a topic where there's a bit of confusion in the industry today. If you try to nail down telemetry, what is telemetry really? Well, it is a transport mechanism. Could be Yang push. It could be Google protocol buffers. So it's sort of a new transport mechanism in contrast to for example, SNMP. The other thing is it sort of turned things up and down in old style systems. The management system pulled the data. In telemetry, it's more of a push, where the management system subscribe to relevant data. So it pushes stuff over a new transport protocol. And the third thing I would say is that the data models are relevant, so you actually know what's the data, what's the schema for the data. And those three together makes a telemetry protocol. But what's interesting here, okay, but what about the data itself? Well, does it really matter if I push a string over SNMP or if I push it over Google protocols? There's some technical differences. But what actually matters then is the quality, that the data that's being pushed by telemetry or pulled by SNMP, that's the important discussion we should have. And telemetry doesn't really say what's the quality of that data. Having that said, if you look in our architecture, we have the test agents. Mats will talk more about this soon. We have test agents that generate the traffic. They report data back to our central controller. So you could call that a telemetry protocol, if you so like. But what's more interesting is that Netrans, we produce service-oriented telemetry data. I think this is why we should focus a little bit more on the content rather than the protocol. So device telemetry is still device-oriented. It tells about, do you have sort of a faulty interface card? Do you have an interface down? Previously, it was reported over SNMP, now telemetry push, but it's still the same data. Device-oriented, and you need that for device analysis. From Netrans, we push telemetry northbound with service KPIs like MOS scores, loss latency. So that's a different kind of payload.
Okay, and a different kind of measurement, because you're trying to look at the service as an entirety as opposed to individual devices.
Exactly. So we give service telemetry rather than device telemetry.
So this is probably a good time then to pivot to the architecture, because I can hear folks saying, how does it work? What do I do? Where do I put these probes? And what do the probes talk to? And how is all this information collected?
Good. So the Netrans architecture comprises two components. One is the central controller. We call it Netrans Control Center. And the second piece is what we call Netrans Active Test Agents. We can start with the test agents. So we are a software company. So we only provide software, but that doesn't mean that our software runs on hardware, of course. So you can take our software for the test agent. We provide an ISO image, so you can easily use that to install the test agent on your bare metal servers. You can even use it on a bootable USB to temporarily use a laptop to transform it into a test agent. That's in the physical world. Then we also provide, of course, QCOW2 images for OpenStack and KVM. We provide OVA images for VMware environments. And then if we move into the cloud environments, we have images for Amazon, Google Cloud, and Azure. So you will be well covered from physical to local hypervisors to the public cloud. And regardless of the environment, it's the same software. So you have the same capabilities, the same range of tools that I explained earlier, from layer 1 to layer 7, regardless of the platform that you deploy these test agents.
And where are people putting them in the network? If I want to get complete visibility, where do I have to stick them?
It depends a little bit on the use case again. So you could, in one use case, in the multi-cloud environment, you could launch them specifically in one of the Amazons, Googles, or Azures. And you can deploy them also in your transport network if you have local data centers, for instance, on hypervisors or even on bare metal servers. So it depends. So strategic locations, typically our customers deploy them all the way out to the campus sites. You can install them on an Intel NUC, for instance, and use the Wi-Fi card there, put out a bunch of Intel NUCs in your campus environment to cover your Wi-Fi networks as well. And regardless of the deployment, we have emphasizing on very, very simple getting started. So we have zero touch deployment of the test agents. So when you boot them up, they use Cloud Init, of course. So you can launch these test agents large scale without any human intervention at all. It's very small footprint, as Stefan pointed out earlier on, so we don't eat up and consume the compute availability, especially when you go out to the campus site. Then you will have much more resource-constrained devices, a compute CPE, for instance, where you run your SD-WAN edge. You can sit alongside there. We run in as little as 256 megs of RAM with one virtual CPU. And then we have also very, very flexible networking. So we provide dual stack V4, V6, and also interface separation using namespaces. So you can easily send traffic in very, very creative and innovative ways around service chains, for instance, with just one single test agent.
So you sort of anticipated my next question a little bit.
Okay.
You mentioned one of the objections you get is about having to push actual traffic across the data plane. I'm guessing a second objection you get is agents. Oh, God, I don't want to install agents in my environment.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to the previous past when you had hardware specifically, because hardware boxes are always difficult to you need to roll a truck out there to get the test agent installed. Now this is software, so it's really easy and convenient to launch remotely even, and also you can dispose them. You run them and you can rip them out once you're done. So we normally don't get that objection as often as we get the size issue, because in the smaller or resource-constrained environments where firewalls, load balancers, and DPI devices are the primary target, our customer or in the industry doesn't want to have a test agent that consumes 50% of the CPUs, of course.
Uh-huh. It can be very difficult. The agent question is complicated, but I think where we were 5 years ago or 10 years ago was agents were... it didn't always work as well as we might have hoped, or as you alluded to, they could consume resources on the systems and impact the systems. I remember 15 years ago putting out active probing on edge on people's workstations on desktops and then we found the desktops would crash because the agents weren't very because Windows wasn't a very good platform for running things in the background and things like that. Yep. I think we've come a long way since then. And I guess the question here is, are you seeing customers report problems with those agents? And I know what you're going to say here, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
you anticipated my answer already. No, I think these are very, very stable. So we launched back in 2010 already. So we have been, this is our fourth generation of test agents. So they run very, very stable. And just to point out also, in my previous career, I worked with one of the incumbent telcos here in Europe. And I also experienced the hassle of running applications on top of a Windows machine because you couldn't really trust the results and it was very unreliable and unpredictable. Mm-hmm. But we took a different path. We built on a Linux-based distribution. So we stripped out everything from the ground up, basically on a Debian distro, ripped out everything that was unnecessary, and then we optimized it to become a platform for running our own applications. So this is an appliance, it's not an applications. And then we wrap it up in an ISO format or a QCAL2 or whatever format you would like to consume it in. And this means also that we have full control over the network interfaces. We know we have network namespace separation, so we can do very, very flexible traffic steering inside the appliance itself. And this makes a big difference from comparing running an application on an unpredictable Windows platform.
You also mentioned support for V4 and V6.
Yes. So we run dual stack simultaneously. So that's also where we see a strong pull, where we have deployments in IPv6 only deployments, actually, just pretty recently. We had that first interesting milestone.
Yeah. I guess the difference here is that means you have full support for the administrative interfaces. So sometimes we see vendors say they have full IPv6 support, but the only thing they're talking about is the forwarding plane. They can route IPv6 or switch IPv6 without any problems and then forget to do it in the management planes or the web page or something like that.
But we do both, of course. And that leads naturally to the next component in Netrun. So the test agents, they communicate back their results to the Netrun's control center. And the control center is a pretty interesting piece of software. So it's takes also responsibility of the lifecycle management of the test agents. So test agents can be launched on all these wide variety of platforms, as I mentioned earlier. And the controller will maintain and remotely manage the ISO image or whatever image that sits outside there. So that's already built into the system. So there's no need to remotely manage hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of test agents.
So you're saying I don't have to log into each test agent to configure it, set it up, deploy it, and then operate it. I've got the controller.
You can't even, I will say.
Okay.
Because of security reasons, it will call back home to the controller. It looks pretty much like an SD-WAN setup or architecture where you can think of the test agent as being an SD-WAN edge, calling back home to the controller. And then the controller takes lifecycle management responsibility. And then our controller is also the test coordinator. So if you think of a hub and spoke scenario with hundreds of test agents distributed, someone has to coordinate all this. When should the streams be started, in which directions, which metrics should be used, which protocol layer should be executed? All this is part of the control center's responsibility. And then on the test agent, thousands of packets per second are analyzed on each individual interface. Statistics and metrics are fed back to the controller. The controller then applies aggregation and analytics and consolidates their results and provides them then out either on a web UI or the two APIs that we have and that's most commonly used in automation frameworks. So we have a REST API, of course, but we also have a NetConf Yang API.
Okay, so when I want to see results from tests that I'm running, I go to the controller. That's where I can pull up reports and get the analysis.
Yes, exactly.
And is this controller, can I run it on premises? Is it up in the cloud?
We support both deployment options. So we launched in Amazon AWS already in 2011. That was our first generation of the controller. So we host enterprises and service providers in our cloud. But then we have also an on-prem version with the same feature set and same multi-tenancy capability that we can run on-prem for managed service providers or enterprises or even service providers.
So I've got the agents, I've got the controller, I'm running tests regularly. What as an operator am I sort of doing with the controller daily? So how am I interacting with this interface? What am I looking for from?
It depends a little bit on the use case. Again, we can think of the most simple deployment, then you would just use the web UI. You use the web UI with its built-in real-time monitoring dashboard. You will see SLAs on the specific service monitors that you have set up. You can also use it for on-demand testing. So a network engineer can log into the controller. It can use the UI to either build sequences of test steps, or the engineer can also reuse pre-built templates, of course, for simple reuse of comprehensive testing. That, I think, is the most trivial or simple setup. And then you can think of Netrunz being part of the orchestration workflow where Netrunz is a piece that enables a more holistic automation workflow.
So this is the idea that you go from planning to design to implement to operate. There's like that very generalized life cycle of plan and then act. And so you're saying that you feed in not just to, oh, we found a problem. You're also saying we can help with the planning and the design process.
Mm. Yeah, I can chime in here. So looking at sort of the service life cycle, and how we fit into that one. Some part of this thinking started when I was at TLF and Cisco with NSO, and we worked with NSO, and I had customers coming back to me and said, oh, great. Now NSO has configured the network, and NSO told me that the configuration was correct. But how do I know that the service work end-to-end? I still sort of have to do show stats command at each router. So how can I know that it works? So that's where we actually hook in. So if you look at the flow, you have the design phase where you define the different kinds of services you sell to customers or that you use in-house. What you do in the control center is for each type of service, you also define how to test the service. So if this is a new connection to a new campus, we should test this throughput, we should test these firewall ports, we should test these cost settings. And you design that template and you give it a name and store it in the controller. So that's sort of in the design phase. But then when someone orders that service or a user gets the service, what you should do then is to have your automation engine, could be Ansible playbooks or your Python script or Cisco NSO. After the provisioning, after reconfiguration, one single API call to the control center. Hey, Mr. Control Center, can you also test it? And that's a very important piece. I would say in most cases today, the provisioning team, they they do a network configuration change or provision a new service. It's Friday afternoon. They go to the pub. They have a beer and say hooray. And then on Monday morning, the operations people are being screamed at from customers and end users for a service that doesn't work. And the operations people never heard of that. Oh, have that change happened? What's that service? And they start drawing things on paper and look at their fault managers and try to infer. So I think this is a crucial piece that we try to talk to our customers quite a lot. In software, if you check in new code, you test that code. And what we're trying to say is that when you design your service, design a test case, when you provision, when you activate that, you should run that test case. And I think that's a brutally important change in how you should look at that operations process.
And that's where the whole assurance piece comes in. You're actually making sure, okay, I've set this up, but does it actually work?
Yes, exactly. So, and after that piece, there's actually another interesting thing. So you set it up, you test it, green light, you know that it works. That removes, I would say, quite a lot of hassle from the operations people. We've heard also from customers that in many cases, the service did not even work at provisioning time. So it removes that piece.
Yeah.
But there is actually a second piece that you also can automate. Once you've passed that test and the automation tool, your orchestration, should not just run that test. It should also configure a service monitor so that the operation guys, when they come in on Monday morning, they look at their screen. On their screen, they have, okay, we have a new site, foobar, we have an SLA, that SLA is green. So the automation engine should also make sure that that real-time ongoing SLA monitoring did happen. So we're pushing things back to the automation platform. You should test the service, the reconfiguration, but you should also make sure that you set up a monitor for that same service. And that should actually be the responsibility of the provisioning team. And the problem, of course, that they didn't have an API for that. In the best case, they could do a ping call from the Python. That's all they could do. So there was no API for doing test and monitoring. If you have the control center, now you have a rich API for doing tests, for doing monitors. And even later on, when you have an SLA violation, so the control center will report that branch office over there, they have an SLA violation on a specific API. What you can then, from your orchestration or your automation tool, you can trigger a troubleshooting script from the control center. That could, for example, be doing a hop-by-hop analysis using reflection techniques to isolate. It's actually on this specific link.
So you're actually doing some sort of like test automation. You're saying if the network goes into a non-bad condition, then start activating additional tests to try and to get to the bottom of it. So if you know in your network you're running this type of, you know, some voice, some printing, some thin client, you might then say, well, I need to activate some probing on that I don't normally do to get deeper insights into that so that when the help desk gets the call or starts to activate their process, they've got data there ready to go straight into it. And that's an automation form?
Yes. And I think this is really interesting because if you look at cost of operations, I mean, sort of all the internal escalations you have and that you need to bring the experts, they need to take their shoes on and run throughout the network and do this kind of test. With the controller, as Mats explained, it's a central piece of software that communicates with test agents in the network, and you can prepare centralized, ready to use test scripts. And also, we haven't talked too much about reflection, but here I think one very important technology is Mats mentioned that we can interact with IPSLA, etc. Of course, you don't have test agents at every location in the network, but if you, for example, use our control center to trigger a trace route, then you can see each hop by hop. So you know each individual hop. And most of the vendors today can do TVAM, so that's just reflection. We will send the traffic to a node, and it will reflect the packets back with a timestamp. Then we can do that hop by hop, and then finally automatically spot it's on this specific leg.
So I want to pull back just for a second and make sure I'm getting this. In terms of automation, your controller has APIs that you can expose to third-party automation and orchestration tools.
Right. So we have a REST API and we have a NetConfYang API supporting testing, monitor, and troubleshooting.
Okay. So if I've got an Ansible playbook that includes A, B, and C, I can also then bring NetRounds into it for that active testing component if I've just kicked off a new service.
Correct. Exactly.
we've talked quite a bit about automation and how that sort of thing and the background of the product. So hopefully by now most people listening have got an understanding of how NetRounds positions their product in the market. Let's talk about how, the sort of customers you've got and what they're doing. It's always good to hear customer stories. So the first one that we've prepared is talking about the global VPN and how you, a customer had some problems with keeping that working properly.
Yeah, sure. The first use case relates to a global VPN provider that had one of the top 10 largest companies in the world as their customer. So they reported capacity issues with one of their data center interconnect links from North America to Europe. I think this was a 400 meg service. They reported that they could successfully run UDP traffic across this on 400 meg, but all the TCP services behaved sluggishly and could not really reach a stable connection. And the thing here was that they escalated this to the service provider, and the service provider looked into their existing assurance solutions, which just showed green lights, and there was not a single sign of any QS degradation. And the customer repeatedly reported the issue, and it escalated, and it went so far that the customer even threatened to leave and churn to another operator. So we got engaged in this, and we deployed a number of test agents in their data centers, and we pretty quickly figure out together with the service provider that when we ran TCP throughput tests, RFC 6349s and a multi-session TCP test, we could validate, of course, that there was not a flat, stable TCP connection. And after some joint troubleshooting together with the service provider, the service provider figured out also that this was related to a misconfigured queue management, the tail drop. As we all know who has been working with TCP, that if you are too dramatic with your red configuration, you can get these kind of impacts on the TCP behavior. So that was, I think this problem had been going on for many, many weeks, even months. And now within 2 days, we figured out what the problem was. We got proof what was the issue, and then we could help the...
It's funny when you get hard proof, people start to think differently about the problem. It's too easy to dismiss sort of... That couldn't possibly happen, you know.
It's so easy otherwise just to finger point to another department, another division, or something. It's
blame the customer, just say the customer doesn't know what they're talking about. And in a big organization, these things go around, it just gets bumped around. Oh, it's not my network. It's not my part of the network. It's your part of the network. It's the backbone. It's the edge.
Exactly. So at the end, the end user now deployed test agents in all their locations, not only the data center. So for every new branch they deployed, they do a proper service activation testing, because this problem actually was there from day one, but no one discovered it until weeks later when they start to hit the limitations and the capacity limits of the link. And that's when the queue management kicks in anyway. So I think this would have easily been spotted by doing a proper service activation testing. So I think that this proves the point that the classical assurance systems, the device-oriented assurance systems, will not capture this, because this was not a fault by definition. It was a misconfiguration of the queue tail drop.
And I think it's also important to state that all the layers that were involved here, the customer, the service provider, you guys, you actually had data to take back to the service provider and say, hey, this is what we're seeing. It's not just a sort of empty finger pointing. You actually had data to share with them that could then get something moving on the troubleshooting side.
And then I think also the important piece here is the collaborating aspect, that you can share the same single pane of glass where you see the proof points, you see the metrics, you see the TCP rates going up and down, and you immediately realize this is something fishy going on. You have to fix it. It's not just not just words anymore.
And so the second use case you wanted to talk about had to do with virtual appliances and service chains.
Yeah, I think virtual appliances, service chains, and multi-clouds is a very, very hot topic. And for us, we see a strong pull from our customers, and where they migrate from physical boxes to virtual boxes. I think that the simplest case is just bringing a physical router, now turning into a virtual appliance. That alone poses a number of challenges, because number one, you don't have a physical interface anymore to connect any device. So you need to have something virtualized to begin with, to attach even. And then the virtualization itself, with many layers of virtualization of the network, also creates a number of blind spots. And that's just with one single physical appliance. We have also had had customers where they have had the one of the physical appliances residing on the edge device and the other in the public cloud. And this is now becoming really, really challenging because these two are working in tandem and the functionality depends on both working properly. And the only way here, again, is to validate this is to send traffic across the data plane. So our test agents have played an instrumental role when migrating those physical boxes into virtualized because of the otherwise there is a lot of uncertainty of will this migration work or not. I think many of the listeners and the audience of this show also is in the same situation where they are moving from the old physical boxes, but the main uncertainty is can I really trust this now? Will I get the performance that I expect? Will I get the behavior?
And it's not even whether you get the performance through the virtual appliance that you're expecting. It's detecting whether or not it's performing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
so the days of guarantees in systems is gone. If you've got a system in the cloud or you're in a virtual infrastructure and you can't know if you're using an overlay network to a lesser or greater degree, you can predict certain things, but some things become unpredictable. And in this case, this is where I'm a big favor of these observability tools and monitoring tools that we're talking about a lot these days, is because it doesn't matter what you actually do, you've got something telling you that that's not working. It doesn't diagnose whether the virtual appliance is overloaded or dropping packets or why. It tells you that it's happening. And that's actually more important than getting bent out of shape about moving from physical firewalls to virtual firewalls. What you need is a system that'll tell you there's something wrong with it, because the problems that you have with virtual appliances are exactly the same as you want to have with your physical firewalls.
Yeah, I mean, and you would have new problems like new MTU challenges that you didn't have in the physical world, because when you move into the virtual world, all of a sudden there are layers of networking that consumes your MTU, which you didn't think of in the physical world. That the only way to capture that is to, first of all, do an MTU test. And that is a common problem we see a lot out there.
There's too many pieces in the path that might not accept 9,000 byte, payloads, or even 1,500 byte payloads. Yeah. You know, you might actually be down to 1,300 and something.
And again, going back to that specific question, if you ask OpenStack Cilometer, for instance, you will not get the answer whether or not you have an MTU issue, at least not to my knowledge. Not yet. Yeah.
But it could be anywhere. And the challenge here is that increasingly with SD-WAN and running overlays over overlays or MPLS, the MTU is a major issue. And if you need to find your MTU, you need a tool that's going to allow you to sweep the end-to-end path. And it can change over time. That is, the network provider can change their technology and suddenly shift from an MTU of this to that. And you will never know until the problem has occurred and now you're getting intermittent connection losses when you run big fat transfers or print jobs or something,
Exactly. I think it's interesting that you mentioned that as well, because one thing with sort of classical assurance systems that more focus on the management plane, they desperately need an inventory topology system somewhere to correlate when they're trying to do their alchemy. And the good thing here is that since we're just a client, we send the packets and the packets get routed as any packet. So we don't need to sort of do lookups into a topology database or an inventory database. We follow the path. Since we're routed packets, and that removes a lot of complexity from some of the assurance projects I have seen over my years.
Well, Mats and Stefan, we're coming to the end of the show. I want to make sure if folks are interested how to get more information about you. But first, so you're a software company then. So what's your pricing model? How do you license the product?
Yeah, we have two deployment options. Most enterprise customers, they use our hosted multi-tenant control center, which we provide in Amazon AWS, and we have been since 2011, so long experience there. It's very stable. We also have an on-prem version, which is popular among the larger service providers and managed service providers. And the pricing structure follows basically the size of the network. So the larger network, the more test agents you normally need, and the pricing is also follows the size.
Okay. And do folks go direct through you, or do you work with resellers? How does that work?
You can buy Netrounce directly from us. We are globally present. And you can also reach out to your Cisco sales rep, as Netrounce is available on Cisco's global price list as well. So it's up to you where you prefer to get Netrounce from. We will make sure you get it.
You'll accept customers from anywhere.
Yes.
Okay. Well, Mats and Stefan, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for this interesting discussion on active testing and service assurance. If folks want to find out more from you, where should they go?
They should go to netrounds.com/packetpushers, where we have created a bunch of specific content to the packet pusher audience. So go there and find out.
Yeah, you mentioned there's a short paper on the nature of service assurance.
Yes, we have a monitoring cheat sheet and a lot of other useful topics, the contents on the same topic.
Fantastic. All right, that's netrounds.com/packetpushers. Matt and Stefan, thanks again for being a sponsor. And thank you for being a listener. You can find this and many more fine, free technical podcasts along with our community blog at packetpushers.net. You can follow us on Twitter at packetpushers, find us on LinkedIn, like us on Facebook, and rate us on iTunes. And last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.